So I get to do the practical session, but I'm also aware that as the last speaker, I'm the person keeping everyone away from the pub. So I'll try to get this through in good time. So one of the nice things about Django, I think, is that is the quality of the documentation is extremely high, principally because it was written by Adrian and Jacob, one of whom has a journalism degree and the other one has a literature degree. So so I think we sort of hit a home run coming out of the gate on that one. That's mixed sports analogies there. But it meant that if I'm giving a practical talk, I really need to find something that isn't particularly well documented. Adjusting the image. So I thought about talking about test-driven development with Django, but there is an absolute ton of decent information out there. There's excellent documentation. There are presentations that have been done in the past which are up on SlideShare. So I really hope this works. Turn on mirroring. Yes, magic. Okay. Excellent. So I thought I'd talk about a topic that's very close to my heart, debugging in Django. So I should emphasize, this talk is not about test-driven development. This is a man who clearly practices test-driven development and is ascending into the heavens on a cushion of bug-free, perfect code that he can refactor in a second whenever he feels like it. No, this talk is about bug-driven development, which looks a lot more like this. The pony has already hit the windscreen, and you've got to go in there and clean up the mess. This is shipmentoffail.com, which I was introduced to this afternoon, and is full of wonders. So I'm going to be going over a few techniques that I use for debugging stuff in Django. Summary there, doesn't matter. Let's jump straight into it. Also, I'm running this. I needed some buggy code to run these against, so I decided to pick up my own blog, which I haven't maintained in over a year and is a massive tangled ball of spaghetti. So you get to see source code from that. So here is a local install of my blog. Excellent, it works. It's got the lorem text on it. The first trick with Django is that Django's principal tool for debugging is the error page. And the handy thing about the error page, you've probably seen it. If you've written any Django code before and you've hit an error, you get this actually quite nice error page come up. Useful thing about it is that you can trigger it manually by adding assert false anywhere in any of your views. So I can do that, hit refresh, and bang, up comes our error page. And I've introduced an error to get this out, which is something I do an awful lot. Not always deliberately. Nice thing about our error page, it was designed by a chap called Wilson Miner, who went to work for Apple about 2 weeks later. And is also responsible for the Django project website. So it's nice to have. We can almost say that this was designed by Apple. So the error page, I'm sure you've seen and explored it. It's got a few really useful little tricks in it. Obviously, the most important bit is the exception and the exception location. So line 68 of views.py is where we've got this error. But there are things like you can expand the. It gives you a traceback which you can expand to see the context lines around the. Different points. You can expand the local variables and see more or less what was going on at that point. And a really handy thing is switch to a copy and paste view, which is ideal for copying and pasting into an email to your coworkers. Or if you click this button here, which is rather spookily named share this track back on a public website, it'll actually submit that to Django Paste to dpaste.com, which is a site used by the Django IRC support channels to share error messages. So I don't know how often people click that button. It's quite scary looking.
I've done it. It does nice highlighting too.
Yes, there we go. That's Pigments, I believe, the Python syntax highlighting library. So I tend to use this page a lot like the PHP info page in PHP. It's got a full dump of things like meta information about the request. All of your settings come out. And it's got the get and post variables as well, which is handy because you can do things like add a query string on up here and see it come up in here. It's not so useful for get, but if you're posting a form, this can be quite a handy way of getting a quick summary of what data's actually got through to the page for when you're writing your views. The other thing about this is you can say assert false. You can also say assert false and an expression, and that expression gets loaded up on the page. So you've got your sort of ghetto print statement right there, but in nicely formatted HTML. But speaking of...
It's also
There is one of those for... I know the Pylons guys have had one of those. Quite frankly, it scared the bejesus out of me, so I've refused to run that one. Yeah, so there are some pretty crazy hacks going on around this kind of thing. But I mentioned ghetto print statements. This is one thing that some people... Well, I've totally gone to the wrong tab there. Where are we? This is one thing that some people haven't realised, is that you can put print statements straight in your views, and then when you refresh the page, they show up in your in the development server's log, which is another very quick way of doing debugging. Of course, if you're going to do logging, it makes sense to do logging properly. Django doesn't really do anything about logging, because Python comes with a fantastic logging module built into the standard library. Only the thing is almost too fantastic. It was based on one of the Java logging things, and so it comes through as this bewildering array of log handlers and channels and warning levels and all sorts of crazy stuff that often puts people off. There were complaints about this, and a couple of years ago they added a logging.basicconfig method, which lets you very quickly set up logging so that you can use it. And so if you stick that in your settings.py, you can start logging sort of semi-properly. Again, wrong place. So I can do import logging, logging.debug message, and this time it'll come out in the error log again. Well, it should do, unless I've redirected it somewhere else. I've redirected it somewhere else. Yeah, so you get your logging messages come through here. The nice thing about the logging framework is that you can do proper file-based logging with it. If I say I want file name tempmyapp.log, then I refresh this, and I think I've got another one here. There we go. So now I've got a proper log file that I can tell, and this is something you can actually use in production. But of course, because it's built on top of the Python logging framework, you can do things like you can log to a socket, send log messages across to other servers. I think there are SMTP logging things. There's all sorts of useful stuff you can use on top of that. But that's still not particularly exciting. Neither is the fact that I've lost my presentation. There we are. One thing I did find quite recently that's really handy is the ability to log the calling context of a function. I'll make sure that I'll be writing up these notes online for people who actually want to copy some of this code down later. So often if you're logging functions, you can stick a log message in a function, and you'll start getting information out of it, but it's not particularly useful because you might be calling that function from dozens of different places in your code, and there's only a certain context in which errors are caused. So it turns out Python's exception handling, I had this all the way down at the bottom, includes the ability to extract the current stack of where you are in the program and provide that back as a data structure, which you can pretty format and send to your log file. So if I call my buggy function, from way up here, you can see why this is buggy code. This is at least a year's worth of accumulated junk. Here we go. So I can def index. So I can call my buggy function, refresh the page, and the log file. I didn't go through all of the examples here beforehand deliberately, because I thought if I'm talking about debugging, it's going to be a lot more interesting if I get a few bugs come up while I'm going. So that takes an argument, apparently. We'll see if that works. There we go. But now the file I'm tailing gets a full dump of the context of where that individual call was. And this is just a Python data structure, so you can slice back up to the previous entry, you can log things like just the single calling function. It makes it a lot easier to dissect what went wrong when you log a bizarre condition somewhere. But the really exciting one is the Python debugger. Now, I asked around at work, a couple of people are using things like Eclipse has a Eclipse with the Python tools has a graphical debugger, and I think Komodo has one as well. But I've never really got the hang of graphical debuggers. sometimes it's nice to stick with the command line. So Python has this thing called PDB, the Python debugger, which comes with Python. And a neat thing you can do with PDB is trigger it directly in your Django view. So if I say import PDB, pdb.setTrace, and then refresh this page, what happens is the browser completely hangs. You can see I've got a little loading icon going on there, and it says waiting for localhost. But it's going to wait forever because the development server over here has dropped me straight into the debugger, which is really handy. I can do things. I can list the current context. I can see that I'm in the index view. I've got to that particular line. I can inspect local variables. So if I look at rec, which is the request object, I can actually see everything that's in there. I can see what local variables I've got. I can even call... where the hell am I now? Okay. I can even call my buggy function, it was called, wasn't it? I can even call stuff that's... I can even call functions that I've defined within my Python code. And when I'm finished with this, I can hit N to keep on stepping through the different things. I can hit... and then I can hit C to give up the debugging session and jump back into the regular thing. And at that point, the browser finally unhangs itself and I get the page load. And this is an incredibly powerful way of exploring a program because it lets you interact with your application while it's running. It's kind of like being able to... it's kind of like the small talk guys are always going on about how great it is to be able to open an SSH session with their live code and interact with the objects. This isn't quite as neat as that, but it does mean that you can get your system up and running and debug things from right in the heart of it. Another tip that's really handy when you're working with a debugger is... let's get out of this. My first project. So the debugger works great. It works great if you can... modify the code like that. Sometimes you'll find yourself wanting to debug things like command line utilities, so the manage.py family of things. I've got a project here that doesn't have a database, so when I run manage.py test to run the test suite, I get an ugly exception come back saying it's improperly configured. But what I can do there is type python-i before that command, and then it's the same as running that command line script, but I get dropped into the Python interactive prompt right at the end. So then there's a command in the debugger called PM, which stands for postmortem. I can say import PDB, pdb.pm. And what that does is looks at the last exception that was fired, the last exception that was caused, that happened in the environment, and jump me back into that inside the debugger. So now I'm inside the complain function in whatever file this is. I can type where, I think, to see my current place in the call stack. So I'm in the complain thing. I can see a listing. I can also jump up and down the call stack. So if I say up a few times, I can see, let's go back D for down again, I can see that the problem happened during the create test DB function. And I can say locals to see a list of all of the local arguments going on there. Oh, it looks like we're deep inside the test suite there. So even when you're running sort of custom command line things, it's really easy to jump in there and start exploring where your error occurred. So that's fine for when you're developing things, but errors, despite our best wishes, our best efforts, errors happen in production as well. Now, Django has a couple of things built in for dealing with this, which are really... This is like core Django legacy code. This is stuff we came up with 4.5 years ago, and it's still in there. There are two settings that you've probably seen if you've modified a Django settings.py file. There's admins and managers. And admins is a list of names and email addresses, and managers is a list of names and email addresses. And there's very little guidance as to what those things actually do. Well, these actually relate to the production error handling. You set up a bunch of admins and then set debug equals false, which is the Django flag for I'm in production now. You can get any HTTP 500 errors, any exceptions to the phone within Django, can be emailed to you as tracebacks. This works fantastically well on sort of low to medium traffic sites and is a recipe for total disaster if you're running something high traffic. There's also, and this is straight out of the newsroom. There's a setting for managers where you can set up a bunch of email addresses who get sent an email every time a 404 error occurs. And the idea there is that if you've got your production team and they've been breaking links left, right, and centre, you can spam the bejesus out of them with 404 errors. There are settings for saying things like ignore 404s that end with .php or .cgi, because those are usually bots trying to find security vulnerabilities in your code. So that's sort of what you get with Django out of the box. That's it's not particularly ideal for high traffic sites. But there are a bunch of hooks within Django for rolling your own error handling. And there are some projects out there that have done exactly that. This is quite a fun one. This guy's written a error system that uses Jabber and sends you a Jabber alert every time an error occurs on your site. So again, not something you want in a high traffic situation. But it's a nice example of the kind of custom error handling you can have. Actually, it turns out this guy did it. This guy kind of took the wrong approach in that he's written a custom 500 view, kind of the Django equivalent of the template of the Apache template that gets rendered when there's a 500 error. But there's actually a lower level interface to Django's error handling, which is nicely illustrated by this. This is DB Error Log by David Kramer. And what this does is every time a 500 error occurs, it logs that to the database. And it's got a model set up so that you can use the Django admin interface to browse through your errors. But a neat thing that he's done is, because obviously if you've got an error on your homepage, you're going to end up with hundreds and hundreds of reports of that error. So he uses an MD5 hash of the trace pack to identify errors that have already been seen and clusters those all together. So you can go in and see this one error has had 500 reports, but you don't have to scroll through 500 different error messages. And the way he built this is using Django's sort of built-in hook for error handling. Django has this concept of middleware, which are classes that can be executed around every single request. And one of the middleware hooks is process exception. You can drop in a piece of middleware in your middleware classes section, set it up so that every exception that comes in, you process in some way. These are the first few lines of the DB log middleware, but you could potentially be logging these to a database. You could be sending these over a socket connection to a central reporting server. There's full flexibility to handle production errors however you need to. There are a couple of other useful bits of middleware that you can use for debugging things, which rather than having slides for, I'll just demonstrate. So the first one of those is, where's my middleware settings? Here we go. First one of these is the profiler middleware, which you can find on the ever-useful Django snippets. And what the profile middleware lets you do is... I think my page is hung. I've still got that debugging statement in there, haven't I? Let's kill that. Ooh, didn't like that. So with the profile middleware installed, you can add ?prof on the end of any URL on your site, and it'll give you the full output of... one of Python's various profiling modules, I think this one uses cprofile, showing which functions have had the most time spent within them. I'm terrible at understanding what all of this stuff means, but there's quite a nice guide in the Python manual, so it does all make sense eventually. It looks like most of the time on my site spent dealing with element tree stuff, because I'm actually using element tree against the markup in the entries to tidy up entities and do things like that. So that's the profiler, which is pretty handy. Another one, which isn't available publicly yet because I haven't pasted it into Django snippets, is the debug footer middleware. There have been a few attempts at this kind of thing in the past. Basically, the idea is that in debug mode, Django has a SQL log. Every time you run a query from the ORM, the query gets logged. The query gets added to an array, essentially. Which incidentally is the reason that you should never run long-running sort of import processes with debug equals true on, because you'll end up with sort of 30 megabytes of SQL clogging up this one array in the system. But the nice thing about the SQL log is that you can hook into it and use it to show what queries have been run. I've turned on the debug footer middleware. What this does is adds a little red plus at the bottom of the page. Hang on a sec. I'll shrink this down a bit. And if you click the plus, you get a box with a bunch of debug information about the current page load on there. So this tells you that it took 0.3 seconds, it loaded homepage, big head, and base.html templates. And it executed all of the SQL queries, which is quite a few. I haven't really optimized this page very much. But at the same time, it took 0.001 seconds, so I'm not too worried about fixing that just yet. I'll be putting that up on Django snippets, and patches are definitely welcome. It would be nice if somebody would take the debug footer and give me new features to play with. So that's middleware. I said I wasn't going to talk about test-driven development, but what I will talk about is a really useful component of Django's testing framework called the test client, which you can abuse really nicely to play with your application interactively. Personally, I spend most of my time developing Python in the interactive shell. How am I going to do this? Oh, that's not looking good. I think I'll kill and restart that, to be honest. Projects, Django. Right. Is that legible? More or less. So, I spend most of my time when I'm developing anything in Python in the interactive prompt. If you haven't seen this before, this is IPython, which is an enhanced version of the Python shell. It's got tab completion, the ability to run some directory commands right in the space. You can say os.tab, and it'll show you all of the things in that module. So it's really handy. And if you've got it installed, Django picks up on that. And when you run the manage.py shell command, which drops you into the shell but pre-configured to with Django settings and things loaded in, Django automatically picks up IPython and uses that instead. So one thing you can do is... you can import this thing from the Django testing framework called the test client. Now, the test client is a testing tool used for simulating HTTP requests within your unit test. So you can, using it, say, simulate a request to my homepage, have a look at the HTML that came back, and a bunch of other things besides. And the nice thing about the test client is you can use it interactively as well. So if I say c equals client and then c.get/... that gives me back an HTTP response object. It gives me back the response that Django would give me if I visited the home page. So if I say r equals that, now I can print r, and I'll see the actual HTML. Of course, I've got that debug middleware in, so most of this is logged SQL calls. I'll just turn that one off again. There we go. So I can get back that page, and I can store it in a variable. And then, as well as printing it out, I can also do things like look at the headers that it's got. Headers. And I can debug my application interactively using this. But the really handy trick is that you can use another piece of the test environment called called setup test environment. When Django runs your unit tests, it hooks up a bunch of things to configure the environment for capturing extra information. And one of the things it does is extends the templating system to include the template and the context that was used to render a page in the request object that comes back from that test client. So if I run setup test environment and do another test run, c.get... So I've got that, but I can also now say r.template, and it'll give me back the template objects that were used during that request, and I can interactively inspect those and see what they were. But more interesting than that, I can say r.context and see the actual, and this gives me the context, the actual variables that were passed to that template. There's a better example of that is if I do c.get 2008/talks, I think, because that's got less weird rubbish in it. So here we go. This is the context that I passed to the talks page on my site. when you're writing unit tests, this is fantastically useful because it means that you can run assertions against the variables that were passed into your template as opposed to the HTML that came back out, which means you can create unit tests that survive even when you're changing the HTML, the design of your page. When you're playing with it interactively, it's just a really handy way of confirming what it was that you were trying, of checking the variables that passed into the template. And you can do things like get back the... I can get back the user object that came in from the... This is the anonymous user because I'm not logged in. But it's another way of interactively exploring your application at runtime. So that's bug-driven development with Django. Those are the tools that Django gives you for fixing the bugs after they happen. If you're interested in finding the bugs before they happen, it really is worth looking at Django's test-driven development support, which, as I mentioned, is unlike this stuff, is properly documented. I'll be putting up full notes on my blog with all of these tips if you want to pick those up later. And I think I've left... Actually, I didn't have a clock, but I think I've left time for questions. Blimey.
I've still just been at work through a transition from PHP platform to Rails. One of the things that... when we were doing it, we evaluated Django, and just the general approach was... I personally felt it's a very well thought out setup. However, one of the things that's sort of perhaps holding Django back is maybe some of the testing tools around behavior-driven development and testing, mm-hmm. some of the other testing things, and also around the, obviously there's the evangelism around Rails, which is huge in terms of how it's adopted in the marketplace. And you know, if you want to find out, one of the things that people were looking for at work as well was how many people are available to hire if we change technologies.
Uh-huh.
And obviously that's another huge thing. I mean, how have you found when you were moving into Django? Obviously. How have you found a good way of evangelizing that side of things, and how do you build the testing tools that are coming on?
So
it's more of a viable switch.
Yeah, I mean, Django does get to bootstrap off the Python community's general testing stuff, and there are some really good test-driven development that's in the Python world. One thing I think is interesting about Rails is they nailed testing so well. Like, before Rails came along, I'd never really tried unit testing with web applications because there are so many things in the way. There's things like anything where you're running against a database and you've got browsers involved and so on is a right nightmare to test. And I think it was only when Rails came out and had this fantastic suite of tools for testing right out of the box that made it easy that turned a lot of people onto like unit testing within web environments. So I'm quite willing to say that a lot of the testing stuff in Django was inspired by Rails. There's support for fixtures, there are things like that. So that's great. And the testing tools for Django are constantly evolving. I think the more stuff you can take from the general Python world on testing, the better. As for hiring people, I think one thing we found at GCAP that was interesting is we've been hiring Django developers very aggressively over the past few months. And Django at the moment is a natural filter. Like, if you say you want developers with Python and Django experience, you get better applicants than if you say you want developers with just PHP experience. Because the filter there is that if you know Django, if you've been working with Django, you probably learnt it yourself. You probably picked it up just out of interest in the technology, which is a great filter for people who are really good developers. Obviously, that's something which the Rails community had 2 years ago. I think today... Today you have to be a bit more careful hiring Rails developers just because the community is so large that it's not just sort of people who
trying to hire people in Rails, because actually there are a lot of people, but there are also a lot of people who've got no idea what they're doing.
Yeah. So unfortunately, and Django's going to go that way in a year or two. So if you're going to hire Django people, now's a really good time to be doing it, I think. But yeah, I hope that answers the question, more or less. The back. That test client. It's pretty simple. I think it was just rolled from scratch for this. I've actually used tools like Twill with Django. Twill is a sort of Python testing client library, which you can integrate quite easily with it. One thing that I'm really keen on personally is unit testing using CSS selectors. So running assertions where you get back a bunch of HTML and you say, confirm that this selector matches the page that came back. I've got a really noddy little library called SoupSelect that does that using beautiful soup as the HTML parser.
On the server side or on the client side?
There's on the server side. On the client side, there's tools like Selenium and jQuery. You can do some really fun testing stuff with jQuery. Yeah?
Much faster.
Awesome. We should talk. So I'm looking to expand the Django default testing thing with more stuff around CSS selectors and slightly more high level tools for doing that. A question there.
Is this journal happy about all the brain power that has now left?
So the Lawrence Journal World is the newspaper where Django was born back in, 2003 we started on it. It was open source 2005. And I kind of think they're the ultimate open source success story in that they're a local newspaper. They serve a market of about 10, they have a circulation of about 10,000. And yet they have this open source project which is has contributors all over the world. And as a result, their software is way better than it used to be. They open source Django, and with it, one of the first community provided enhancements for Django was somebody internationalized the whole thing, like added full internationalization support, full translation support to things. This is something that local newspapers in Kansas don't really think about. It's like the last place in the world where you'd bother to internationalize anything. But they've actually, the big challenge they had is they're a tiny newspaper in the middle of Kansas. How do you get developers to come and work for you? And they've done incredibly well out of that because they can hire straight from the Django community. Last I heard, they've got about 20, I think they have between 15 and 20 really good Python developers working at a local newspaper. And that's completely unheard of. They've spun the bit that does Django has been spun off into a sort of separate company wholly owned by the newspaper. But I think as far as they're concerned, the other thing is, so Adrian Halavasi left the Lawrence Journal World about 2 months, either 2 months before or 2 months after Django was open sourced. And from their point of view, they don't have him anymore, but he still spends half his time improving their software. So the brain drain is not really a problem for them. I think I really do think that as far as open source goes, they're a really interesting kind of case study of how it can make sense even in the strangest places. And I wasn't keeping track of the time at all, so I'm probably out of time. I believe there's not only a pub, but there's money behind the bar.
Yeah.
So I think I'll thank you very much for listening.